The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them, so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals. Whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation, Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Como madre orgullosa, siempre quiero lo mejor para mi familia. Y los únicos huevos que compro son Eggland's Best. ¿Casualidad? ¡Para nada! No importa cómo los cocines, siempre están frescos y deliciosos. Además, tienen más vitaminas D y E y un 25% menos de grasas saturadas que los huevos comunes. ¿Por qué conformarse con menos cuando puedes tener lo mejor? Eggland's Best. Mejor sabor, mejor nutrición, mejores huevos. Visita egglandsbest.com para obtener más información.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Chilluminati Podcast, episode 261. As always, I'm one of your hosts, Mike Martin, today joined by the Betty and Barney Rubble of L.A.
Oh, Jesse what? Nellis. I thought you were going to say Betty and Barney Hill of L.A.
Same.
No, I think I've done that one. I think I did Betty and Barney Hill. So who's... We all know Betty's in charge.
I'm Betty just because I'm the sexier of the two of us.
I'm also literally the guy who's like, hey, Fred, like, that's my whole... Like, I won't talk on this show for, like, 8 minutes, and then I'll be like, what do you think that guy's favorite McDonald's food is? You know? Like, I feel like that's very true to, like, my spirit. In the way that I am the Deadpool of the show, unfortunately, I think unfortunately I'm
Why unfortunately? Because you like Blackagar Baltigan, so your tastes are off?
Because Deadpool is obnoxious. That's what's, like, we like him, you know? We can like him, but we can all admit he's obnoxious. And, like, you know, like, it's the same thing with this. It's like... Look, Jesse's hotter than me. He's got the legs. He's got the bod. And what do I got?
I fit well in a dress. What can I say?
What do I got? Yeah.
Are you going to wear one at Alex's wedding in a couple weeks?
No, because I don't want to upstage the bride.
Fair enough.
And I'm very grateful that you're not going to do that. I know. Thanks, bud. Yeah, I'm very grateful. Yeah. So that's going to be great. Patreon.com/ChilluminatiPod is a website that you can go to.
I don't even know how we got from... Betty and Barney Rubble too here, but we did
thing.
It.
Here's the thing. Albert Fish hollowed my soul out.
Oh my God. I have something to say about that.
I'm so glad we've moved on from torture porn to just torture because it's really, I was not a fan of any of that.
The Alex Fish series showed me in our audience grew up with unrestricted access to the internet when they were younger and who did not.
Just to be clear. His name is Albert Fish, not Alex Fish. That's my name. I am not this guy. That's not what's going on here.
But you do love that sweet, sweet Nutter Butter.
Like, it's a really great type of cookie. And I like them. And they taste good on vanilla ice cream. Mm-hmm. And that's all I'm going to say about it. It's just a good cookie. Sure. That's it. Yeah. That's it. At the risk of saying a pun, I'm still reeling from those Albert Fish episodes.
Something I didn't say, and I kind of want to fill in now, is before Albert Fish was killed, one of his quotes was when he learned he was being killed by...
Whoa, time out. We were free of this, and you're like, hold on, let me say some actually wacky shit that Albert Fish said.
I've had it in my head for 2 days. He just simply said, oh, what a thrill it would be to be killed by the electric chair. So he was very excited.
That's his famous quote. That's like his, like,
Yeah, that's like his end quote.
That's his Tumblr quote.
Who would have thought it would be killed by the electric chair? All right, now I'm done with Albert Fish.
There's
officially.
A couple tiers on this Patreon, and the one is this the first? Are we?
This
official?
Is the first. This is the first. This is the official.
We're live. You can see me now. The trolls have finally won. The lunatics,
not worth it, to be honest.
The lunatics are running the asylum now. You can see now all my sick outfits.
Yeah, now you can see our rooms.
Yeah, now you can see how serious my comic book addiction is. And if that doesn't get you going.
I don't think they can.
And if that doesn't get you going, head on over to patreon.com/chilluminatipod to find out just how psycho I have gone.
Has it gotten bigger since I've been there? Probably not much. I can't imagine.
No, yes, definitely it has.
Well, that's true. Because like every time I go, especially when I end up staying with you, we go to the comic shop and there's like, you walk out with like a 6-inch tall stack of just comics every time.
I had to like stop. Like, okay, I no longer collect magazines. May or may not be because I'm not allowed to subscribe to them at my own local comic book store anymore because of how many I've left there before. But I want to be clear. I've paid for all of them. I'm not some kind of fucking, you know, loser. I sometimes don't go in for several months. And so, as per store policy, I now only purchase trade paperbacks, which is, in general, a healthier way to fly. You know what I'm saying?
Sure, yeah. Whatever you have to tell yourself.
Look.
It helps.
Look, I'm just trying to be positive. I'm trying to make my life better. You know what I mean? I'm just trying to be as actualized as I can be. Patreon.com/chilluminatipod.
Fantastic. Appreciate it. No. Yes, Albert Fish is officially done, gentlemen. And we're going to have a nice little palate cleanser of a two-parter. We're going to the world of space and aliens once again. But not doing anything like Project Pegasus or Montauk Project. Instead, we're actually doing one of the most famous alien sightings to have happened within the United States. This happened in the 80s over the course of a few months. It is known well as the Gulf Breeze sightings, which obviously happened in Gulf Breeze, Florida.
Let me ask you a question.
Uh-huh.
Real quick. For podcasting purposes.
Yes, sir.
Great VOD. You're doing great. You got a cat. That's awesome.
I'm not going to change any of the way we do our podcast for video, homie.
Is there a lot of like this happening with your cat?
Yeah.
With the fur? Oh,
yeah.
Right now? Is that like a thing?
Right now, yeah. But that's,
yeah, now it is.
I think that's
now
part
he's
of
being
the,
pet. That's part of the $20. Yeah, that's part
that's
of
Patreon.
It.
Patreon.com/chilluminatipod.
Yeah, look at that cat.
If you want to be in on this joke 100%, head on over to patreon.com/chilluminatipod.
Okay, the Gulf Breeze sightings. Before we jump in, my sources,
this is crazy
obviously,
because I've never heard of this shit before, and it's like
that's
so
crazy
popular.
To me too. I figured you would. This is like one like a Phoenix Lights kind of situation in terms of that. Like, it was like a couple just normal folk saw some stuff, but it wasn't as widespread as the Phoenix Lights. It was just as popular, I would say.
So when you say Phoenix Lights, that's just lights, and this is a two-parter. So what happened? To make it two parts?
Well, the first part is going to be the entire sighting on its own. And then part two is going to be the immense amount of investigation and debunking that went into it. And there's a story in its own when it comes to the debunking, because there's some stuff that came out that showed that debunkers like...
It's like those paleontologists that were like racing to name all the dinosaurs and just like fucked each other over and shit.
It's not to say that this isn't a hoax either. It's just to say that the debunkers were so convinced that it was a hoax, but they didn't have the evidence that they needed that they maybe created some of their own. And it all hinges off of 5 Polaroid photos that were taken during these encounters that we will talk
Polaroids.
About. Yes, Polaroids. So
interesting.
Yeah.
Maybe I have seen these. I don't know. We'll
you,
see.
You I would imagine you have. I truly think you've probably seen the photos if you're remotely into the UFO world at all. These sightings took place from late 1987 into early 1988 to a man by the name of Ed Walters. And we're going to talk a little bit about him as we always do. Again, top of the episode of the sources. I forgot I got tangentially pulled away. The Gulf Breeze sightings by Ed Walters and Francis Walters from 1990 is the main source, like book source. But there are also a ton of articles that were written at the time. There was a 30-year article that I used that was written in 2017. And a bunch of news, like interviews and stuff from the Times as well. There's like a bajillion things you can go watch about this stuff. Ed Walters, just the guy this happened to, was born in the early 1940s, and by the time of the Gulf Breeze sightings, he was in his mid-40s. He spent much of his early life in the southeastern United States, growing up in a small, modest family, nothing like 12 kids or anything.
To be clear on timetables, you're saying he's born in the 40s, now he's 40, so we're talking the 80s.
Yes, sir. Talking the 80s. 1987 particularly is when the sightings take place. He was just kind of a hardworking, enterprising individual, even from a young age. His background wasn't particularly remarkable in any way, with no known involvement in any unusual, weird activities like a lot of these sightings tend to have. We usually have somebody who's already into the UFOs or radio signals.
Somebody who's like, I've been like super depressed and I feel like somebody's targeting me. Yeah.
Yeah, like those kinds of people. This guy was just living his life. He's just living a normal middle class like life. And after completing high school, Walters pursued a career in construction and building contracting in a field that he had until the sightings happened. He seemed to have a natural aptitude for the work. Everybody who worked with him said he was just a hard worker and good at what he did. And he had his own little successful business in Gulf Breeze, Florida, in an early age. And by the mid 1980s, Walters was a well-established figure within his own local community, known for his
Is Gulf Breeze
in Florida? It's a place.
Where else could it be?
No, I'm aware. Like I'm trying to figure out. Jesus Christ. I'm trying to figure out, is it Panhandle? Is it down south? Is it in the...
I feel like it's got to be on the left side.
Right? Yeah, it seems like Gulf Breeze would be kind of like Gulf of Mexico.
Yeah.
It looks like it's near... Oh, it's like off... It's at the very, very... It's Panhandle. Okay. Way off to the left at the very corner before it meets Alabama.
Oh, so we're Texabama line?
Yeah, we're like in Pensacola. It's Gulf Breeze is like you have to take a bridge over the ocean to get to Gulf Breeze.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah,
Florida's
best,
as somebody may call it, paradise.
Florabama. Florabama. I watched that on
the tip of the Florida MTV. Panhandle, right where it meets Alabama.
Yeah, the place all people visiting Florida want to go to. That and Jacksonville, right. Like the real two great places to go to.
Do you think it's like super, super dank over there? Is that like the vibe? You think it's like
dank? If you mean just like gross and like it feels like you're swimming through the air and bugs are everywhere, yes.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Yeah, it's humid all the time and uncomfortable.
Not like that stanky, cranky, bing, bang, bong, jazz grass. I'm talking about dank like a cave. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's how Houston is, basically. It's just like dank like a cave all the time out here. Back to the story at hand. And by the mid 1980s, Walters was really well known in his community. He was known as reliable. He had a lot of high quality work. He was the guy people went to when they needed something fixed up at their place or their house. He often took on residential projects, including home constructions, renovations, other contracting jobs, and just had a solid reputation amongst all of his clients. And he was a bit of a family man himself when he grew up. Ed Walters ended up marrying Frances Walters, a partnership that was central to his life forever since he met her. And together, they had a family and were deeply involved in the Gulf Breeze community. The couple lived in a comfortable middle-class home in a quiet little neighborhood, and Ed specifically helped design and build. Like, he helped design the neighborhood, and he, you know, was living in it.
Pen and paper?
Yeah, because it's the 1980s, man. This is when the economy is, like, booming still.
Yeah, but it's still Florida. Yep. So there's only two options here. One... Him being involved in the community means like golf carts. They all golf carted around their little like perfect town, or they all dressed like pirates and did a lot of drugs. Like there's only two options for Florida.
I think it's the first one, unfortunately, but God, I wish it was the second one.
Like further you go south in Florida, the more pirates there are and the more drugs there are. It's just the way it is.
Yeah. And this is pretty as north in Florida as you can be.
80s is like the glory days though of the
cocaine.
Golf cart.
Okay. I don't know.
Like palm tree.
The little communities and stuff.
Yeah, that's
I think
the
80s Florida, and the only reference I have is Vice City. So like that's what I think of. So
but like the part where where the old people are. That yeah. Like
right,
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So definitely more golf cart driving around, that kind of style. And the Walters family was not particularly known for being involved in the whole family itself wasn't, nobody in it was involved in like the weird shit. Nobody was looking into like UFOs. They were just living their life.
Sure. Wink.
He was also known as a devoted husband, a good father, actively participated in his kids' lives and the local school and community events. So like he was around. And before the sightings, Ed Walters had a solid reputation as a dependable, honest man. He was viewed as hardworking, successful businessman who was well-liked by his neighbors, his clients, no known incidents or controversies in his past that would suggest a tendency towards fabrication either or seeking attention. He didn't really have a criminal past. He wasn't like a ne'er-do-well. In fact, many of the people who knew him described Walters as somewhat private and reserved, not the type of person who sought out the limelight. In his professional life, Ed Walters was considered meticulous and detail-oriented. His work as a contractor required precision and reliability in qualities that were also reflected in his personal life. He was seen as a man that of just integrity.
How does a contractor end up designing an entire neighborhood? That's blowing my mind.
Dude, I'm telling you, this is one of those like towns that they built when we're talking 87. This is the rise of suburbs. This is going to be little tiny bullshit towns where now we look at it and we're like, why did we build it this way? What the hell were we thinking?
I'm going to send you a picture of where Gulf Breeze is so you can like see it. Like this is the very tip. Like Gulf Breeze is small as hell.
Oh shit. Okay. So this is like that part of like Vice City where you like unlock it like later in the game where you can go. That's like a little bit less city buildings, a little bit more big backyards kind of vibes.
I mean, just looking at it, the whole thing looks like one of those planned communities that is designed to be destroyed in a hurricane.
You want to know how I know it? Here's
how
Pensacola.
Dare you insult his work?
Pensacola Dog Beach, Pensacola Dog Beach West. That's how I know.
That's how you know it's a small ass fucking.
And
area.
across the fucking Pensacola Bay, fucking Bayview Dog Beach.
I didn't even realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a back seat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you, and even negotiates better rates on your bills so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
I can see it's three a tiny place, dog beaches.
Dude. Like, I've never been to, obviously, Gulf Breeze or this other place, but from what I've heard, it reminds like Staten Island. Aren't they similar? Like, kind of detached from the state? You have to, like, go out and over, like, water to get there, and it's kind of pre-planned.
Oh, I mean, if you mean, like, geologically, sure.
Or yeah, geographically, but pre-planned and everything. Yeah. I've never been to Staten Island, so I have no idea if it's, like, the same vibe at all, but
I don't think it's, like, visually or texturally the same vibe, but, like, philosophically, I think it's the same vibe. Also, I don't want to harp on this picture that no one can see forever, but what in the hell is Fast Eddie's Fun Center in Pensacola, Florida?
Good question.
What in the hell is that?
That sounds like it's a Fast Eddie's Fun Center.
That sounds like someplace I would go to get like my kidney removed without my knowledge.
Oh, man. It's like, okay, here, they've got an actual fucking website. Fast Eddie's funcenter.com. Here you go, boys.
This is worth me stopping this episode just to talk about this. They got go-karts, they got mini golf, they got arcades, they got batting cages. Guys, this is how we save America right here.
No, this is trash. So here's the thing. I realize now.
That's rude. This is like a website from 1999 and it's like preserved.
Well, I'm looking at the current modern day and I got to let you know, this is everything's wrong with America. So wow. half of the area is poorly planned housing with like a bunch of weird roads and people with huge backyards and shit. And then the other half, it's like, yo, I live in Gulf Breeze. Man, I can't wait to go take my golf cart out and go to
Fast Eddie's.
Some of the amazing restaurants located on my little tiny island. Chick-fil-A, Dunkin' Donuts, Baskin and Robbins, They have
If you're a listener from Gulf Breeze, I apologize for Jesse's ranting.
No, this is trash. You got trash food.
The town's going to rise up against him?
The town, the one person in town that might.
They're going to probably fucking do in Pensacola, Florida, fucking ban it from fucking schools.
Firehouse Subs, Walmart. This is the most like, this, and again, this is peak 1987 America. They were like, yeah, it's everything people want. I see nothing of like mom and pop Wendy's, Crumble, Panera Bread. There's nothing here that screams like I want to live on an island and like be in paradise.
There's no culture. Yeah. There was never.
Yeah,
there was
zero
never, like,
culture. That's exactly what it is. That's what I'm saying. Zero.
There's
culture.
No shanty town that built up around, you know, where like people came long ago. It was just some fucking guys in the 80s who were like, here, by the dog beach and the other dog beach.
Yeah, no, and that's exactly what it isn't like he's some visionary. He's probably just like a dude with money who was like,
no,
yeah, let's all build
all.
Like shitty houses in the hurricane zone.
No, we're just trying to set the scene. You see what I'm saying?
This is the 80s, okay? Climate change was only just kind
of
getting
Let
bad.
Me just tell you, the 80s ruined a lot of shit for a lot of people. So.
The 80s was a pretty rough one for the US of A, I must say.
Yeah.
So shitting on Gulf Breeze is what our stance here at Chilluminati is.
Look, I am looking at modern day Gulf Breeze, and there is no reason to visit or go there at all.
I'm like, sure
there's a flyover portion.
You're one of my best friends. So I gotta stand by you. I have
There's lots of people there that I'm sure are great. I'm sure they agree with us.
Meanwhile, Pensacola has Peg Leg Pete's Oyster Bar.
Okay,
that
you're telling me
slaps?
Fast Eddie and Peg Leg Pete are both in Pensacola, Florida?
Yeah, Pensacola is where I feel like, I'm going to say it, I feel like Gulf Breeze was probably swampland. They threw dirt into it.
Yeah,
like,
you know what? There's a size of city where being in the big city is better than being in the suburbs.
I just didn't look into the foundation of Gulf Breeze for the episode, so I just don't have answers as to how
Pensacola
it was
just has a place called Crabs, and everything there's red. Pensacola slaps. Pensacola is one bridge away. How are you going to Gulf Breeze? You suck. Gulf Breeze,
You want to go get some crabs, boys?
They have the Sneaky Tiki Bar in Pensacola slaps.
Sneaky
Pensacola's got everything.
We like it.
Are we going to live show in Pensacola and shit on Gulf Breeze the whole time?
They got a Landshark Bar and Grill.
It was settled by the British in the 18th century. Town Point, live oaks from the Gulf were used for shipbuilding. There was a dry dock. Large road development in the 30s. A wooden swing bridge in the 30s. It's all just building shit. And then in the 60s, it was incorporated because of a bridge. And then, obviously, this map, this thing we're about to talk about is the thing that put them on the map, according to their own Wikipedia page.
I mean, it really is. There wasn't much going on there at the time, so
you could say this is the definitive history of Gulf Breeze, Florida. Right?
It might be. It might be the definitive.
Now, to be clear, before we continue, just looking at the map, before Mathis tells us all of these like amazing things about UFOs and shit. I must stress, directly across is a giant airfield. Like, directly across the water is a massive airfield. Like, you know.
Hey, we'll worry about it maybe next episode with the
okay.
airfield.
Okay, right? I'm just don't looking at this giant airfield like, oh, that's interesting.
Don't but worry okay. about it. Not yeah. right now. And the other part about like him is like he had no books on UFOs. He didn't like have any VHS movies on UFOs or any of that stuff. In fact, his hobbies are what like you expect a contractor to do. He liked to fish. He liked to work with his hands, woodworking, that kind of shit. That's like
time
what
out.
He did
time
in his
out.
Free time.
Time out. I'm wrong. There isn't an airfield across from it. There are two massive airfields. One to the north, one to the west. I'm scared to look to the east because I feel like there's just going to be another one there. And
don't
there is.
It.
They're actually.
And don't worry about it right now. We're not worried about the airfields.
All right. I won't.
I'm not worried about them at all. I'm excited that they're there and it makes me happy to know that they're there.
Other part about Walter's personality is that people used to say that he was just a very determined individual. And once he set his mind to something, he pursued it with a focus and an intensity that he was just going to, he doubled down. He was going to get it done. Whatever it was, whatever project it was, the man always set his foot down and made sure he followed through. All this to say that one of the reasons the sightings are so, even today, kind of fought over is because the individual who saw them had a reputation in his community to not be a bullshitter for the sake of the spotlight. He had a successful business. He built the neighborhood. He was involved everywhere. He didn't, you know, there was no immediate like motive for faking these things.
This guy's quote for me right now, he's going to say in my mind, he's like, how much you want to make a bet I could build 40 houses?
In the years leading up to 1987 and the encounter that happened, Ed Walters' life was stable and predictable. His business was doing well. His family life was settled, and he was generally content with his place in the world, at least it seemed. And there were no signs of dramatic upheaval that ended up occurring. There was no like tumult or any combativeness within his family that seemed to be like leaking out anywhere. The Gulf Breeze sightings would not only disrupt his personal life, but also thrust him into the national spotlight. And it challenged everything and everyone around him and what they thought of they believed to know of the world.
Really?
Now, we're looking.
It like rocked his beliefs.
It rocked his entire life.
That's what I always think about more than anything with these types of shit.
Like destroys their life.
Ghosts, monsters, aliens, anything that is like inexplicable. You, the person, reasonable, rational person, you see it. Incontrovertible evidence. What do you do? How do you like go back to work? You know what I mean?
Yeah. And so I've done this mental game in my head so many times as well. Of like, well, if it happened, how would I tell people without them thinking that I'm just doing it for money and whatnot? Because the best way you can get your voice out there is by going to places that'll take you and like talk to people. But those people already believe you anyway. And the people who won't believe you are never going to believe you for the most part. Yeah, it's weird. Like, which is why I was going to say, I think it's important when we do these kinds of episodes, we talk about the history of who these people are up to the point where this stuff happens. You just have context.
Cool, some of these people hometown is.
Are into weird shit, like from day one, or are mega into UFOs from day one. So the night that it happened is November 11th, 1987. And it was just a regular autumn evening in Gulf Breeze, Florida, which I imagine means humid and uncomfortable. And the town, located in its little peninsula between Pensacola and the Gulf of Mexico, was a quiet suburban community with a tiny little population. The weather that night was clear, maybe a slight chill in the air as the sun set, and Ed Walters was at home with his wife, Frances, and their kids. The evening was uneventful, and the family was just going about their usual routine. Their home was a comfortable single-story home in a suburban neighborhood and was surrounded by similar, you know, been to a suburb where all the homes are kind of just like one of three variations. That's kind of what we're talking about here. It was well lit with streetlights casting a soft glow on the quiet streets. And the Walters property also included a backyard that extended towards a wooded area, giving the home a sense of kind of seclusion. And sometime after dinner, as the family settled in for the evening, Ed Walters noticed something kind of weird. Through one of the windows facing the backyard, he saw a bright bluish white light shining from outside. At first, he assumed it might be a car's headlight or a reflection, but the light seemed too intense and steady for that. So, curious, and with a growing sense of unease, Walters decided to step outside to investigate. As he walked out through the back door and into the yard, where the strange light seemed to intensify, he moved closer to the edge of the yard where the trees bordered the property, and the light became almost blinding. It was then that he looked up and saw the source of the illumination, a large, disc-shaped object hovering silently above the trees. Walters would later describe the UFO in much greater detail. He would say the craft was disc-shaped, approximately 30 feet in diameter, with a smooth metallic surface that reflected the light it emitted, and the edges of the disc were adorned with a series of lights that pulsed rhythmically, casting a bluish-white glow over the area. That's what he's like standing in under and looking at this point, is just like this undulating...
A true flying saucer scenario.
In a lot of ways, there are some differences we'll see when we get to the photos. This encounter wasn't the one he immediately took the pictures of.
Can I ask one other thing? Is like you said, later he described it. Like
yeah, when how it was much asked or interviewed?
Like
not much
that
because
week?
Within that. Oh God, I think it would be a couple months.
I guess my point is not after a press tour where he's had to tell the story 100 times.
No. This is not like we're not getting this detail years later. This is something much, much earlier in his experience. He also would eventually go on to say that the underside of the craft was flat with a small dome or protrusion in the center from which the light seemed to emanate. The object, he said, was hovering about 100 to 200 feet above the ground, completely silent except for a faint humming noise that Walters said he could barely even hear. And the air around him felt charged, like statically charged with electricity, as if the craft was generating some kind of energy field. And despite the brightness of the lights, the craft itself was still clearly visible to him, with distinct features that Walters would later try to capture in sketches that he would draw, and then the Polaroids later on.
The Polaroids later?
So there was he had a group of sightings over the course of about 4 months, and then they stopped.
Okay, I see.
Like, it wasn't something that went on for years. It was something that happened very in a batch, and then it ended. As Walters was standing under the giant light before him, something happened that would change his life. A beam of light, different from the ambient glow of the craft, suddenly shot out from the underside of the UFO. The beam was focused and intense, and it struck Walters directly in the chest. And this is going to sound kind of familiar to the Travis Walton moment where he gets hit with the beam.
In the movie that we witnessed?
In the movie that we witnessed, but that part was pretty one-to-one to the description. The abduction itself, where it went more horror movie-y.
Oh, when he was floating around in the fucking
when he was floating
intestines.
In zero grav and bursting through skin or whatever.
I don't know what that was about. Yeah.
Yeah.
You were, even at the moment, were freaking out about how accurate that the actual encounter was. Yeah.
They did a great job capturing that first encounter, the way everybody freaked out.
Did this guy get lifted up too?
Not lifted and thrown. No. What ended up happening is the beam of light hit him and it struck him directly in the chest. And what he said is he described the sensation that was both overwhelming and terrifying. The moment the light hit him, Walters felt a sudden paralysis take hold of his body. That's the part that's similar to the Walton abduction. He was unable to move, speak, or even think clearly, but that might be because he was terrified. His mind, he said, he was flooded with a sense of disorientation as if time itself had slowed down. And he later recalled feelings as though he was being scrutinized, as if the light was probing his thoughts and his memories. This paralysis lasted for what felt like forever for him, but in reality, it was only a few seconds. Walters described the experience as unsettling, with a sense of vulnerability and helplessness unlike anything he said he had felt before, which is a man that prided himself on his control and his staunch nature of getting things done. This scared the ever-living shit out of him. Now, as the craft returned, there was a point where he was able to break free from the paralysis, or some say maybe the beam was deactivated instead of him actually breaking free. But he instinctively...
Did he say he was fighting it?
Yeah, he was he was trying, but he couldn't do anything about it. He was stuck. But the moment he got free from this beam, he ran back into the house, grabbed his Polaroid camera, and rushed back outside. The craft was still there, hovering in the same spot, its lights continuing to pulse in the sky.
That's a true G right there, to be honest.
With trembling hands, he took a few photographs. The camera's flash cut through the darkness, and each time, the Polaroid ejected a new photo. He snapped several pictures, trying to capture the object from different angles, and the craft seemed to be almost waiting, as if allowing him to document its presence. These photographs would later become some of the most iconic images associated with this, as they showed a glowing disc-shaped object with the lights clearly visible around the edges. The photos were grainy and imperfect, as one might expect from a Polaroid, and he was also, shaking. And I'm going to link you some of these photos, unless you've already Googled them.
I did not.
No. Okay, so there's a few we can get to. I'm going to actually link you to the 30-year article that actually has the photos in it as well. It's the Pensacola Times, the Pensacola News Journal. Oh, what the fuck? Did I give you the
wrong
link?
A storied rag.
The fuck?
Yo, is this one of them? Oh, wow.
Oh, here we go. Here, this is better. This is just a Reddit. This is the Reddit post I was using for the photos. So these are the photos, four photos.
Oh, this is just a fabricated. This first one on the article is they made a hoax of it. Oh, wow. But it looks fucking really similar to the real Polaroids.
Those are the four.
I do recognize this second photo.
Yeah.
This one right here.
You would probably recognize a few of them.
Yeah. It has straight up X-Files vibes.
The
way they show the flying saucer at the beginning of the X-Files TV show. That's
Close Encounters
of
the Third Kind kind of as well. This is very similar.
Yeah, the actual look of the ship, very much Close Encounters.
So those are the photographs that he got.
It's kind of occluded. You can't see all the way around it, just in case you can't see these pictures.
What are your thoughts, Jesse?
You can just see where the light's reflecting, and that's it. You can't see any of the rest of the metal shape anywhere.
Boy, they're Polaroids, so okay, but they scream fake.
What about it is just screams fake to you? I'm not saying you're wrong. We're going to talk about that for sure.
So The thing that really screams fake to me is every photo, despite the first photos, just to give people an example of what the photos are. The first photo is angled up above power lines, mm-hmm. and there is the UFO in the distance. Second photo is angled up above a tree line, UFO closer potentially, but based on where it is, either it is a massive UFO far away or it's a little baby UFO very close. Yeah. The next one is a street shot where the UFO is now in the middle of the street and it looks to be as wide as a two-lane road. And then the last one is the UFO kind of up and above stuff with like a light shining
this
down. Maybe the same light that got him. Who knows?
Low res though. This one is very hard.
But the thing about all of these is every single one has the same weird, I don't know the best way to describe it. Is like if you take, so actually I do know how to describe it. I was, over the last couple of days, I was in New York and I needed to make a video for this trip that I went on for this, you know, other thing I'm doing. And while I was there, I was thinking, oh, maybe I'll make a video of like me doing the spoof. Cause I had to drive in from Newark. I was like, maybe I'll make a video of me spoofing, Sopranos. And I'll do like a shot out of the side of the car and it's driving by all like the factories and shit, you know, but I couldn't use the footage because in the shot was the half of the driver's hands on the front wheel of the car because the window was reflecting the driver. And that is what all these shots look like. They look like reflections of something like it's shot through a window and it's reflecting a light from behind where he's at.
The one that kind of weirds me, and this is just me like kind of trying to apply physics to this. The third picture where it's like hovering over the street and it seems big.
Yeah.
Like if this thing is this close to the ground and we're looking at it straight on now, and then you look at some of these other pictures where you can see the sort of like light disc underneath it, especially the last picture in this set, like the one where it's near the road, you shouldn't be able to see that well, first of all, because of the angle, unless it's literally just tilted towards you at the same angle that it would be if it was much higher up. Like if like you wouldn't be able to see under a car that's on the road because it, you know, you have to get like down on your hands and knees to get really close to the car to see that. And then the way that the light is coming out and illuminating the road, it looks like a little bit too localized below the craft for it to like be as big of a light source as it seems to be based on the picture. I know that's like super specific, but like that's really the only thing. Like I agree with Jesse about the like kind of blurry quality of the images, but like I'm like any of these other ones, if a scientist showed this to me and told me it was real, I would be like, that seems like possible. But this third one to me is the one that feels like a bad composition.
You boys have good eyes, and I appreciate both of your insights because one of the, and we'll talk about it too. Again, we have two parts to go over this kind of thing, but what you, Jesse, you describing the reflection is pretty much dead on. And so what debunkers believe this to be, and we'll talk about it in that.
Like for clarity's sake, the second photo is the least reflective looking photo, but they all have the same quality of like, it's not just the UFO, but everything else around it has kind of the filter of I'm taking a photo through a window vibe.
So similar to when I said the debunkers almost like so fully believed that it was fake that they planted evidence to just say it was debunked. In similar fashion, we'll talk about it, but these photos, he could be taking these because something like this did happen and he freaked out, but then it never came back. So he was trying to come up with evidence in some kind. So what you might be looking at here is a reflection of a ceiling fan without the blades visible because they're either moving or couldn't look. And now with that in mind, does that click a little bit more to you when you look at these photos? Do you see what I mean? Like this might be the reflection of a ceiling fan from the glass that he's taking the photo through.
Like photos 1, 2, and 4. Sure. But
three
photo
is weird.
Three is like a weird angle for, yep. Unless, I mean, I
see,
sure.
And that's where, again, people are like, well, maybe one of them is real and the other ones he just tried to replicate.
It looks like a piece of like dishware. It looks like something because the way it's shiny, like that one, I think it's the second photo, the like really blue one, right? Like that's how things catch light, like that are made of like chrome metal, like when they're pretty close, because they're all going to be hit by one light source, right? So like the fact that that thing's like up in the sky and illuminated by like a blue light, it doesn't look like the light is emanating from the object. It looks right. like the ocean. You know what I mean? How it's like one solid color. So yeah. I think personally, like rather than a ceiling fan, almost like a model or like a little, like literally like a, like sure. if you took like a drill and like drilled into like a colander a little more. Or something like that.
And that's a frustrating thing, is like they could never find a model. And the people who we'll talk, that's why I want that model, let's shelve that, hold that for next week. That model theory and all that stuff is crucial to the whole reason why the debunkers are dubious in the first place. So
I mean, it bears
keep those theories. I love it.
It bears mentioning that the other option, of course, is that these are pictures of flying saucers.
Right? Yeah, like he was shaking, and we, yeah. we talked about it before, if these things are somehow personal, like they almost like are kind of like a level of like through how you perceive reality, they show themselves, it's almost impossible to catch them on camera. I don't know. Did you see there was more? We got to talk, maybe Minnesota. Anyway.
I mean, like there's also just looking at them, if the window theory isn't correct, it has the exact same, just trying to describe it to people listening at home, it has the exact same ethereal
Seriously,
nature
Google as Gulf when- Breeze photos, you'll find them.
When people used to take photos with the dead as like a goof.
Yes.
You know?
Oh, yeah.
And they would like double or superimpose them. They take one photo and they take another photo with the exact same thing of film. It has that same ethereal vibe to it where it's like it is both present but not present in the photo. You can like see through.
Do you know what Pepper's Ghost is?
The issue is you can't do double exposure with a Polaroid shot.
But do you know Pepper's Ghost?
I don't.
I know the name. I feel like I will know that.
Pepper's Ghost is like a classic. It's pretty much exactly what you're saying. It's just done really skillfully. In the Haunted Mansion, they do it.
It's the
effect. Got it. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So it really produces a very, very reliable, like tangible, visible effect. And if you didn't know what that was and you took a picture of that out of context, like... Mm-hmm. God damn. Like it looks like a fucking ghost, right? Like,
yeah,
sure.
So I don't know. I feel like it's something like that.
Yeah. Well, he ended up taking those shots regardless. And after taking those photographs, he ended up just standing there frozen in his backyard, not by a beam, but just by awe, staring at this thing.
Just like it's done. Oh shit.
Then as suddenly as it had appeared, the UFO began to move. It ascended slowly at first, then accelerated rapidly, shooting off into the night sky with an incredible speed. And within moments, it was gone, leaving behind only the faint hum that quickly faded into the silence. And Walters was just left standing alone in his yard, his heart racing and his mind reeling. He felt a mixture of fear and confusion, but awe, what did he just witness? He didn't know if it was real, was his mind playing tricks on him? But he knew one thing for certain, something extraordinary just happened, and he had photographs to prove it. He walked back inside after finally getting he said his legs felt really weak and like he couldn't move for a minute, and it just like, he had to just kind of get his composure before he was able to walk back into his house. And he said he went to his wife, Frances, who was waiting for him, having heard him run outside. And Walters tried to explain what just happened, but the words came out in a rush. It was jumbled and incoherent. He just showed her the photographs. And then together, they kind of just stared at the images, trying to make sense of what he said he saw. And that night, Ed said he just didn't sleep. He stayed up all night. His mind was racing with thoughts of the encounter. He replayed the events over and over, trying to recall every detail. The encounter had clearly shaken this man to his fucking core. It really threw the way he saw the world into skew. He was all really messed up. In the days that followed the encounter, Walters was just consumed by the experience. He found himself constantly looking up at the sky, half expecting the craft to return, half hoping it would return.
This I completely empathize with. This is human. This is true.
Yeah, if this happened to me, I would be like, you wouldn't hear from me for days. I'd probably just be outside all day, all night.
Well, me and Jesse personally would probably hear from you quite a bit.
Yes, yes. The only people who would hear from you would be the two of you. The world
we get
as
like
a whole.
800 text messages in a row.
He'd be like, oh my God,
2 a.m.
Oh my God.
And we'd be like, what?
Am I seeing this? Am I high? Is this real? What is this? Look at this. Zoom in. What do you think this is?
I need a cross-reference. I can't trust my own high brain.
Tweet this.
He also said he began to feel a growing sense of responsibility, like he'd captured something extraordinary and he needed to share it with the world to let everybody know, which I can also get. Like, if you truly saw this, you would want to share this. You'd be like, look, somebody else, you need to understand what I just saw. And that's when you sound the craziest. So after a bunch of deliberation, Walters decided to go public with the story. He contacted the Gulf Breeze Sentinel, the local newspaper, and arranged to meet with a local reporter. And when he showed the photographs and recounted his experience, the reporter was initially skeptical, but the images were compelling enough to warrant further investigation. So, like, this is just a couple, like, a week or two after. Like, it happened very quickly after to get the you know, his interview.
That's one of the benefits of Polaroids.
Yeah. And on November 17th, 1987, literally 6 days later, the Gulf Breeze Sentinel published Walter's story along with several of the photographs. The article quickly gained attention, not just in Gulf Breeze, but it kind of spread quickly across the entire fucking country, which was, you know, I imagine surprising.
There's a lot more to it, right? There's a little bit more, like there was something about this story that made it a little bit more remarkable, right? Like that it spread.
Yeah, and this is obviously before any debunking has happened. So just like all you're getting is the story and the photographs with the story as context. So yeah, of course.
And there's corroboration, right?
Skeptically, it's literally like, oh wow, yes, he must be telling the truth.
But there's also corroboration, right?
Yeah, his wife. His wife also will have seen, because that was just the first encounter. He had a few encounters that we'll get to over the course of a few months.
So they all weren't just right away. This is just after the first one.
This is just after the first one.
I see. Okay. Yep. I thought this is just after all of them it broke in a week.
Because the point for this episode is to take it from his point of view, to just assume what he's saying is telling the truth. And if this is true, you don't know that they're going to come back. So of course you're just going to go like after a few days, you're like, fuck it. I'm going to the local newspaper. They know me. I'm probably built his like, you know, son's house or whatever. Like,
if he really saw aliens, this is exactly what he would do. Like, that's what
in
I would
1987 do. As well. Like when there's no internet, none of that shit. So, but again, this thing went crazy across the country very quickly. UFO enthusiasts and investigators descended on the town, eager to learn more about the sighting and to see the photographs for themselves, which, you know, you think about this time and even in the past when it came to ghosts or even Jeff the Mongoose. Anytime this shit gets out, people fucking flood. They show up because they want to see this shit. Walter's decision to go public marked the beginning of a media frenzy that would follow him for years. His life was once quiet and predictable, was now thrust into the national spotlight, and he became a central figure in one of the most controversial UFO cases in history. The initial reaction to Walter's story was a mix of awe, skepticism, and curiosity. A lot of the locals were intrigued, and some even claimed to have seen strange lights in the sky around the same time as Walter's encounter, which is similar to the Phoenix Lights. The photographs, while not definitive proof, were compelling enough to spark at least some sort of debate. However, skepticism quickly emerged as well. Some doubted the authenticity of the photographs, suggesting they could have been staged or manipulated. Others questioned his motives, wondering if he might be seeking attention or financial gain. And despite the mixed reactions, the story still spread rapidly. UFO investigators, both amateur and professional, started arriving in Gulf Breeze, eager to interview Walters and examine his evidence.
Mothman.
And the town, once a quiet and peaceful community, was now a focal point for UFO enthusiasts, researchers, and the media. Can you imagine? You're in your quiet little 80s community suburbs, and all of a sudden, all the UFO enthusiasts just fucking show up. A bunch of sweaty knees just arrive.
It's like all I can think about. Yeah, like it's like I all I can imagine is like a soundtrack. And they come in and they're like looking around with their little meters.
The full bands are driving in.
Yeah.
I would be probably so mad if I was living there. But if it was me, I'd be excited. In the days that followed November 11th, 1997, Ed Walters found himself in a heightened state of awareness. The experience had left him shaken, but curious, and he began to notice every small detail around him, almost paranoid-like. Particularly in the night sky, he got very familiar with the positions of the stars for how often he was just staring at them, waiting for another one or hoping something would happen with a mix of anticipation and dread.
Isn't it crazy how that happens, though? Like, you can just go outside for like a month and then you're like, I know this place. I know this sky.
The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place, so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month, so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit, track budgets, and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
I was a soldier, then a veteran, a husband, and a father. And with my VA home loan, I'm a homeowner. No down payment required and no PMI. Build your future with the VA home loan. Get what you earn. Visit choose.va.gov.
Not all veterans are eligible for the type or amount of benefits mentioned here.
I do. I know it very well. I am very, very aware of like all the planets out there and shit like that. And that even like little, you start getting used to like, used to little phenomenons. Remember I sent you a video of that flickering light that was blue, red, white, blue, red, white. So I did some research when I got back inside, and that's the atmosphere actually fucking with the star, like the light coming through. And even though it looks clear in the night sky, because of, I guess, just like, I don't know what the specifics are, but it makes it flicker red, like blue, white, red, blue, white. Yeah. And I was like, oh, okay, well, I fucking know that now at least, because it wasn't moving. And that was what was making, I was like, but something's not right. It's just not moving. Anyway, the days following, after he went to the news, he just went about his daily life as best as he could. He began carrying his Polaroid camera with him everywhere he went, determined not to miss another opportunity to document anything unusual. And he also kept a notebook where he recorded his thoughts, observations, and any strange occurrences he noticed around his home or in the sky. The man just became paranoid and obsessed with it, which is such a real feeling. The second encounter came pretty much a week and a half later on November 17th, 1987. The second significant encounter was, oh, sorry, six days after the initial sighting on the evening of November 17th, 1987. And by this time, the story of his first encounter had already been published in the Gulf Breeze Sentinel, and the media attention already was beginning to grow. That evening, as he was returning home from a job site, Walters once again noticed a bright light in the sky. This time, he was driving through a wooded area not far from his home. The light appeared suddenly, hovering over the trees to his right. It was the same bluish-white color that he had seen before, and it was moving in a manner that immediately caught his attention. Walters pulled his truck over to the side of the road and watched the light for a moment. It seemed to be following the contour of the road, moving parallel to his vehicle, but at a higher altitude. The light was steady, without any of the flickering or blinking that might be associated with an airplane or helicopter. And as the light drew closer, Walters felt a familiar sense of fear and fascination. He quickly grabbed his Polaroid camera from the passenger seat and stepped out the truck. The craft was now clearly visible, a disc-shaped object similar to the one that he had seen on November 11th, and it hovered silently, its lights casting eerie shadows on the trees below. Walters managed to take several photographs of the craft as it hovered above the road, and he described the object as being slightly smaller than the one that he had seen previously, but with the same metallic appearance and pulsating lights. After a few minutes, the craft began to ascend again, moving slowly at first and then similarly to the first craft, accelerating rapidly into the night sky before disappearing from view entirely. And that was the second encounter. The third encounter happened even less in less time than the last one, only 3 days later, on November 20th, 1987. This time, the encounter was more intense and personal. It occurred late at night, he said around 10:30 p.m., and Walters was preparing for bed. The house was quiet, his wife was already asleep, and the children were in their rooms. Walters was in the living room reviewing the photographs they had taken during the previous encounters when he suddenly felt a strange sensation, a tingling in the back of his neck, followed by a feeling of being watched. He turned towards the window and saw a bright light shining through the curtains. The light was so intense that it illuminated the entire room.
Wait, so he was looking at the pictures?
The man became obsessed. Yeah.
Okay.
So he was like, wait, but then the alien stopped by to be like, I hope you got a good shot. really upset that, like, you better got my good side, Glorknock.
Well, it's just interesting. Like, if we're talking about maybe there is some sort of like way that the alien can monitor his thoughts, right? The fact that he was looking at the actual pictures of the ship when the ship showed up is kind of interesting. I don't know.
Yeah, I agree. It is weird. So without thinking, he grabbed his camera and rushed to the window.
Hell yeah.
As he pulled back the curtains, He saw the now familiar disc-shaped craft hovering just above his backyard, even closer than before. The craft was nearly the same size as the one in the earlier encounters, with the same pulsating lights around its perimeter. However, this time, the craft was emitting a low humming noise that reverberated through the entire house, which I've never experienced an earthquake, but I live near an airport, and if it's a low-flying plane, you can definitely feel a little bit of a vibration. I imagine it's kind of like that.
But there's been so many happening lately over here that, like, while you're here, you might just get one. I don't know what's going on. There's been a lot unfazed. Of earthquakes.
I will die in an earthquake. I'm convinced of this. We had one that shook my entire apartment for like a full minute. I just sat there watching TV like, cable better not go
you're
out.
You're so like, Californian. Oh my God.
I'm convinced one that Earth will open. I'll get sucked in and be like, what's happening?
Oh, no.
Meanwhile, your phone's just blowing up with texts from me about aliens that are not actually there, but I'm like waiting for them to arrive. He took some photos, and Walters described the humming noise as unsettling, but almost hypnotic. It seemed to vibrate through his entire body, making it difficult for him to focus. Despite the noise, he managed to take several more photographs through the window, capturing the craft as it hovered just above the ground. He then rushed outside, hoping to get a clearer view and more photographs. But as Walters stepped into the backyard, he was struck by just the sheer size of this one. It was larger than it had appeared from the inside of the house, filling much of the space above the backyard. The light from the craft bathed the area in an otherworldly glow, casting long shadows and creating an almost dreamlike atmosphere.
What are we talking about in size here?
He doesn't really describe, like, so the first one was, what do you say, like 200 feet in like diameter or whatever. So I don't know, maybe something like that. I don't know. He doesn't really describe the size.
Because that's another, because if it's the same ship, right? It was just, weird that one shot of it over the road, you know, a road's like 25 feet wide.
He claims the second one he saw was smaller than the first one. So it's not a guarantee.
Right, but
that
is the second
boat,
is that a different ship?
They're supposed to be. They all look identical. They're just a little smaller, a little bigger. That's literally the only difference he ever points out, is that they're just slightly seemingly different shaped in size.
Noted.
But they all look the goddamn same.
Noted, sir. So like, noted, my guy.
They're all. So it's not some sort of prefab alien ship. They're all bespoke alien vessels.
Noted Gulf Breeze.
Noted Gulf Breeze.
Same exact craft, just bigger and smaller, depending.
Yeah, okay. That's what he describes it as. And yeah, I mean, I wish I could tell you. I wish I knew.
Look, I'm here. I got it. Yeah. I accept this man's story. For now, it's true.
So then, you know, he steps outside. Then, without warning, the craft emitted the same beam of light that had paralyzed him during the first encounter. This time, however, the beam was not directed at Walters, but at the ground in front of him. The beam created a circle of light on the grass, which began to smolder and burn slightly. Walters later described this as one of the most terrifying moments of his life, as he realized the beam could potentially cause harm.
What if it wasn't a spaceship and it was just a big ass magnifying glass?
Oh, we're just
used
really
by
tiny.
Who?
Yeah, like
exactly, bro. That's why you gotta open that third eye, bro. Yeah.
Fuck.
Galactus's magnifying glass, bro. Get with it.
Despite how afraid he was, he says, he still tried taking pictures of the craft. And after a few minutes, the beam retracted and the craft began to ascend just as it had before. Walters watched as it rose into the sky, disappearing into the night as the previous two had, and the entire encounter lasted less than 10 minutes, but it left him shaken and once again just deeply disturbed.
10 minutes is a long fucking time.
It is a long time.
Like, most encounters that I know about take like, unless you're like driving on the freeway and you barely see it for most of it, I'm talking 2-3 minutes max on most things that people experience, right?
Yeah, they're usually pretty quick. Either that, or they're like, being abducted.
Like, they took me up and they told me the history of the entire galaxy, and they told me why humans are the way they are. And then one of them like kissed my butt for some reason, and I don't know why, but I like forgot about that until 3 years later. So now I'm back home.
Yeah, it's like that kind of vibe. The fourth encounter would actually not happen as quickly. The fourth one wouldn't happen until December 2nd, 1987. This was the fourth major encounter and perhaps the most dramatic one of all of them.
How is the coverage going for him at this point? Like, is he in the news and stuff every time?
So it's spreading crazy. So we're now 3 weeks into after his first encounter, a little more, 3.5 weeks after his first encounter. So we're still it's still like spreading and like it's still very popular. Yeah, so it's not like years later or anything. On this night, Walters had an experience that would solidify his belief that the UFOs were not only real, but potentially dangerous. He says it was a cold night, cold, clear night, and Walters was driving home from a late meeting with a client. The roads were empty and the town was quiet as he made his way through the familiar streets of Gulf Breeze. As he approached the outskirts of town near a large open field, he once again noticed a bright light in the sky. This time, the light was directed ahead of him, hovering above the field. It was stationary at first, but as he got closer, it began to move slowly, descending towards the ground. Walters felt a sense of dread wash over him as he realized that the craft was about to land. He pulled his truck to the side of the road and watched as the disc-shaped craft settled onto the ground in the middle of the field. The lights on the craft dimmed slightly, but it remained clearly visible, its metallic surface reflecting the moonlight in the clear sky. Walters described the craft as being slightly larger than the ones that he'd seen before, with a more pronounced dome on top. Despite his fear, Walters felt compelled to approach the craft. He grabbed his camera and began walking towards the field, keeping his distance but trying to get as close as possible. As he got nearer, he noticed movement around the base of the craft. There were small figures, humanoid in shape, moving around the perimeter of the object. Walters described these figures as being about 4 to 5 feet tall, with large heads, slender bodies, who moved quickly and fluidly, almost as though they were gliding rather than walking. Their skin appeared to be grayish in color, and they had large, dark eyes that seemed to glow slightly in the dim light. Walters immediately recognized them as resembling the classic gray alien that had been reported in other UFO encounters at this point. He watched in stunned silence as the beings moved around the craft, seemingly inspecting it or perhaps performing like some kind of task on it.
Are they naked, did you say?
He assumed they're naked. Yeah, like they're not wearing any.
They like look like South Park. They're just like fucking.
They literally look
dudes.
Like your typical grays. Okay. Yep, that's exactly what they look like. At one point, one of the figures turned towards him, and for a brief moment, their eyes met.
Dude.
Walters felt a sudden wave of emotion, fear, curiosity, and then something he couldn't quite identify. Perhaps a sense of connection or recognition. And realizing the danger he might be in, Walters quickly took several photographs before retreating back to his truck. As he did, the beings re-entered the craft, the lights on the object began to brighten, the craft lifted off the ground, rising slowly at first, then accelerated rapidly as it shot into the sky, and Walters sat in his truck, shaking, his heart pounding in his chest. He had just witnessed something even more extraordinary than any other things he's seen so far. Seeing those beings, seeing the creatures, fucking like rocked him.
It changes. It makes it even more like the mystery deepens if you see the people.
Because I imagine there's a point. If again, taking it as true, if you are seeing these, maybe you're rationalizing it that there is. Maybe it's military stuff. Maybe it's secret tech. Maybe it's something that they're just like trying or whatever. Then you see this thing land and like, ip, here come the fucking gray aliens out the fucking ship.
Why do they sound like that?
What do they sound like to you?
To me, they're like, Jesse, we're in your brain. Hope you're doing good, homie. Like,
hey, man.
They're very, they're uplifting.
Good. Hey. Oh, man. Hey, you're doing so good.
Do you want to go get tacos?
Yeah. I heard that Earth's fried chicken is really good.
That's not the feeling he got. No, that's not. He felt like he would. He said it fucking terrified him for some reason.
But the feeling was connection. The feeling was alien, mysterious connection, he said.
Yeah, it was like a weed. They locked eyes and
it's a weird vibe to me that so as we go through this and we talk about aliens, we've been doing it for, I'm going to say, honestly, far too long. So many aliens. Way too many.
6 years.
A thing that occurs frequently is someone will either lock eyes or experience a moment of connection or whatever. And depending on the storyteller, it's either the most terrifying moment of their life or they've been transcended to a place of peace. And then I feel like, just because, you know, I'm not over here believing in all the different types of aliens, but I feel like different types of aliens were created to make it make sense. You know what I mean? Like, rather than be like, some of these people might be lying. It's like, no, actually, there's different types. There's some grays who are good grays, and some grays who are bad grays, but then there's the whites, but then there's the tall whites. But there's also the bird people, and there's also the reptile people, and there's also the bug people, right? And I feel like it was all done just to, like, so everyone can be at the table. We all have our D&D characters. We're all here.
It's multiverse. It's the UFOCU.
The UFOCU. That's phenomenal. And the other end of things, if you want to go in the more wackadoo area, is like, if these things are shaping themselves in the way that our kind of public consciousness understands them at the time, that's why they seem to shift, is like, they're grays because that's what's popular. But before that, it was flying wooden boats in the sky.
Some people see weird monkey men. Yeah, some people see mantises.
Yeah, or mantises, which is still seen every once in a while. Yeah, exactly. It's hard to know. But after the December 2nd encounter, Walters became even more meticulous in documenting his experiences. He continued to carry his camera with him, but then he started making sure he had his notebook on him at all times as well. And he also began to reach out to others in the community who had also started reporting similar sightings. Remember, he said other people seemed to see lights in the sky the nights that they were happening as well. He wanted to compare notes, gather more evidence, build a case that would convince even the most skeptical observers. And this is where I get the idea that if these photos are faked, part of me believes he did fucking something happened to him that fucked him up. And he was so desperate for people to believe him, he started just making evidence. You know what I mean?
But didn't he say that he showed Polaroids immediately?
Yes, he says he did. He says he did. Yes.
Now, are any of the photos you showed us those Polaroids?
The one on the, let me get to the fucking photo again. The second photo is supposedly from the very first night, happening above his house, right above the tree lines in his home. I believe the third photo is the one where he pulled his truck over. And like he's like the thing was hovering around and he took a shot. This is not the field one. I don't know what the fourth one's from that we were looking at or the first one. The first one might be when he was driving and he took a shot. Like, remember at night when he was driving in the quiet area, the second one. If you look up, you can find his drawings online. There's like you can find everything on there.
My question is, what about the other pics?
They're out there. You can go look at them. Those are just the four that I grabbed is like a good example of like what they look like. Yeah. Hang on. I can there's other ones if I can grab to head to the right website, but, fuck it. I gotta keep moving. I gotta keep moving. Go look it up. Here's another one. Right. No, see, that's like a 3D rendering. I don't know what, now there's also like AI pictures mixed into this shit.
Yeah. So tough.
And this one here is so clearly
AI.
Okay. Anyway, you can go look it up. I mean, they're there. I'll try to get links to them for the show as well.
Yeah, I'll keep looking. If I find one, I'll drop it.
Yeah, keep looking. You can find his drawings and stuff out there too. He started carrying his notebook with him all the damn time. He wanted to just, like I said, if he's looking for other people to compare notes, Walters really began to experience an even bigger growing sense of paranoia. He felt as though he was being watched, not just by UFOs, but by other entities, talking about like governmental entities or organizations instead interested in his encounters and just kind of spying on him. He installed extra locks on all of his doors, kept a close eye on his surroundings, and became increasingly cautious in his interactions with others, becoming more and more withdrawn. Despite these fears, Walters remained determined to share his story. He continued to work on a book that would be released in, he continued to work with the Gulf Breeze Sentinel. And then in 1989, he began working on a book that would be released in 1990, documenting his experience. The media coverage only intensified. And soon his story was being picked up by national news outlets, UFO investigators and researchers across the country. These subsequent encounters, each more intense and dramatic than the last one, reinforced Walter's belief that he was dealing with something far beyond human understanding. He was no longer just an ordinary man living in a small town. He was now at the center of a phenomenon that was capturing the attention of people around the world. And by mid-December of 1987, Ed Walters had already deeply immersed himself in the phenomenon that had overtaken his life. Within a month, the man's life went from normal construction worker to obsessed UFO person. The media attention continued.
And was he like beloved?
By this across media and stuff, it was heavily divisive. There were skeptics right away. Like it wasn't like fully embraced as he's telling the truth or anything. And the media attention was still growing and he was in frequent contact with UFO investigators, researchers, all of who were eager to document and analyze all of his experiences. And despite the increasing scrutiny, Walters continued to try to live his day-to-day life, albeit with a heightened sense of paranoia. On a chilly evening in mid-December, Walters reported yet another encounter with the mysterious craft that had been haunting him. This sighting occurred in his own backyard again, not far from where the initial encounters had taken place. Walters was outside, checking on some household chores, when he noticed a familiar bluish-white light in the sky. His heart raced as he realized that the object was back. Yeah, seriously, he immediately, his heart sank.
It literally just came into view in the camera, like in the movie, like behind.
Yeah. We got over the shoulder shot as he's like watering his garden. And just out of focus, we can just see it over the tree line. Unlike his earlier encounters, this sighting was relatively brief. Walters observed the craft hovering at a higher altitude than before, making it more difficult to discern specific details. And the disc-shaped object, with its characteristic lights pulsating over the edge along the edges, remained stationary in the sky for only a couple minutes. Walters quickly retrieved his camera and managed to snap several photographs. However, these images were way less clear than those taken during previous encounters due to the distance and the lighting condition. They were essentially like, there's no way, there's nothing in them. You just don't see anything. During this encounter, Walters did not experience the intense physical effects, such as paralysis or the disorienting beam of light that marked their earlier experiences, and the craft remained at a considerable distance the entire time, and there was no apparent interaction between this one and Walters himself. And after a few minutes, the UFO began to ascend and, as always, clicked off and then it was gone. Walters was left standing in his yard, once again feeling frustrated, but relief that the encounter had not escalated or gone any longer and that they fucking seemed to leave him alone this time. Then, late December, as December drew to a close, Walters had another sighting, this time while he was driving through the Gulf breeze at night. The encounter occurred on a quiet, deserted road on the outskirts of town. Walters had been visiting a friend and was driving home alone when he noticed a bright light in the distance. His first thought was that it might be an airplane or a helicopter, but as he continued driving, the light grew brighter and more intense. The light was positioned ahead of him, seemingly hovering above the road in the direction that he was heading. Walters felt a familiar sense of anxiety, but as he continued driving cautiously toward the light, as he approached, he could see that it was not a conventional aircraft. The object was disc-shaped, similar to the ones that he had seen before, with a metallic surface that reflected the moonlight. And the lights around the edges of the craft were, as they always had been, pulsating slowly, casting that weird, eerie glow over the landscape. He pulled his truck over to the side of the road and watched as the craft hovered silently above the treetops. He estimated this one was about 200 feet off the ground, slightly higher than the craft that he had seen in some of the other encounters, and the object seemed to be observing the area, moving slowly from side to side as if scanning his surroundings. Despite the relative calm of the encounter, Walters was really on edge. He reached for his camera, which he now kept in his truck at all times, and quickly took more photographs. The craft remained in place for a few more minutes before suddenly accelerating and shooting off into the sky, just as it had every other previous sighting, and he was left alone in the dark, his truck's engine idling as he tried to process, once again, what he'd seen and why it kept happening. This encounter, while less intense than some of the earlier ones, still reinforced the belief in him that something extraordinary was happening in Gulf Breeze and that the craft's behavior was consistent with the previous sightings, and it made him feel increasingly certain that these objects were just not human in origin. Then we move into 1988. As the new year began, the intensity of the sightings began to diminish, but Walters continued to experience sporadic encounters and unexplained phenomena. These incidents were often brief, way less dramatic than earlier encounters, but they contributed to his overall atmosphere and unease that had settled within his life. One such sighting occurred in early January of 1988. Walters was at home with his family when he noticed a strange light in the sky outside. The light was not as bright or as distinct as the ones that he had seen before, but it caught his attention nonetheless because he's fucking paranoid and hypervigilant.
He thinks everything's a fucking alien at this point.
Everything. Yeah, that he's at the point where everything. He stepped outside and saw a small glowing object moving slowly across the horizon. The object was much smaller than the previous crafts, and its movements were less deliberate, almost erratic. Walters watched the light for several minutes, trying to determine if it was related to the UFOs that he had encountered earlier, and the object did not exhibit the same behavior as the previous craft. In a lot of ways, this thing is exhibiting like a lot of more common UFO encounters even today happen, where they see a light that almost looks like a star, and it just starts moving zigzag in ways that it shouldn't, like breaking the laws of physics. We see, a lot of Air Force people see
that's
like
the Grush.
Yes, zone. Correct. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the object didn't, like I said, it just didn't exhibit any of that previous behavior. It didn't hover. It didn't emit beams of light or produce any noticeable sound. Instead, it just kind of moved across the sky before it just randomly disappeared behind some clouds. This sight left Walters more confused than anything. It was unclear whether the object to him was related to the earlier encounters or if it was something just different. He didn't manage to capture any photographs of this one as the light was way too distant and faint. Despite its ambiguity, the incident added to the growing sense of mystery surrounding his life at this point. He also began to notice around this time other strange occurrences around his home. Electrical appliances will malfunction without explanation. Lights would flicker, and there were strange noises in the middle of the night. These phenomena, while not directly linked to the UFO sightings, also contributed to his growing paranoia. And this is where I go, I'm of two minds. One, we hear about the UFO flap and like paranormal events that tend to occur. If we go way back to Skinwalker Ranch, fucking Bigfoot coming out of the dimensional door in the sky, like weird shit like that. But at the same time, if he's truly as paranoid and he's losing sleep and he's not, you know, doing well mentally, you can start like hallucinating and shit. I mean, even being overtired driving, I have hallucinated a couple of things say, like before.
If I just tell you, hey, be careful where you're sleeping, that hotel that you're staying in tonight, you know, there was a murder in your room, right?
Yeah.
That's going to affect you. This guy like is reckoning with the fact that he's seen the unknown, the unexplainable. Yeah.
So everything, yeah, like you said, everything is like annihilated to him. So like, even if it is normal, his brain, and so these weird paranormal things might just be a concoction of that, or could just be related to a weird UFO flap happening over the Gulf breeze. It's just fucking, who knows? The last major encounter that Walters reported occurred in early 1988, and it was one of the most understated of them all. This time, the sighting took place while Walters was on a late night walk near his home. He had taken to walking at night as a way to kind of clear his mind, cope with the stress that the sightings had, but also like it also let him stare at the night sky at night. So he'd go out there and just look. On this particular night, the sky was clear and the air, he said, was crisp. And as Walters walked through his neighborhood, he noticed a bright light in the sky far in the distance. Initially, he thought, again, maybe it was a star or a planet, but the light seemed to be moving slowly and deliberately. As he continued to watch, he realized that the object was gradually descending, though it was still really far away. Walter stood in the middle of the quiet street, watching as the light moved across the sky. The object was small and distant, making it difficult to discern any specific details, but the movement was consistent with the behavior of the UFOs that he had seen before. The light moved steadily across the horizon, eventually disappearing behind a line of trees. This final encounter was brief, uneventful compared to all of his other sightings, but it marked the end of a period of weird and mysterious experiences for Walters. After this sighting, the encounters seemed to stop. Walters continued to watch the skies, but the craft and the strange lights never returned. In this last sighting, I don't know how common it was in the 80s, but this sounds like a satellite to me, where you see this mark in the sky and it kind of moves in a deliberate fashion. The fact that he said it was descending is kind of weird.
It could be a flare.
Could be a flare, could it be an aircraft of like
if it's
windy,
right? Like if it's windy, right, the flare will move and it will also sink. Like at this point, like even in the world where he's believed, like he saw something, I'm almost inclined to say, like, even in that world, these last couple are iffy.
I agree.
You know what I mean?
They very much are. They're way more iffy for sure.
This sounds like a scared man now more than anything.
Yeah, which almost again adds the credence to like his story a little bit that he's like horrified, but again,
you're buying into him being scared.
Of course.
The timetable is that he is also starting to write a book.
Yeah, but I'm buying into him.
Yeah.
I'm buying into him being true, being real at all. You know what I mean? Okay. Like,
right.
Yeah. Sure.
Yeah. So this ended the sightings. And in the months following these final sightings, Walters found himself reflecting on the experiences he had gone through. The encounters had left him both fascinated and troubled. He had been drawn into a world of weird, unexplained phenomena, but it had come at a cost. The stress of dealing with the sightings, the media attention, the skepticism from others had taken a toll on his emotional well-being and his mental health. Walters continued to document his experiences and work closely with investigators to try and make sense of what had happened. He remained convinced that the objects he had seen were not of this world, and he believed that his encounters were part of something much larger, a phenomenon that was not fully understood. After the initial sightings, we're talking like just the impact we're looking at his own mental health. After all these sightings, Walters found himself increasingly anxious in a more agitated state, according to others. The close encounters with the UFOs had shaken him, leaving him with a deep sense of unease and paranoia that just lasted. Memories of the encounters, especially the paralyzing beam of light and the sight of the strange craft hovering near his home, haunted him day and night. Walters experienced frequent nightmares, often reliving the encounters in his sleep. These dreams were intense and vivid, leaving him feeling drained and exhausted upon waking up. And he would dream of the UFOs returning, of the beams of light paralyzing him again, and of being taken aboard the craft, though he had no conscious memory of that event ever happening, which, you know, he's not saying that these dreams are what happened. It's just that his mind is making it worse. And there are stories of abductions at this point in pop culture and media. These dreams contributed to his sense of uncertainty. He wasn't well rested. It contributed to his agitation. During the day, he found it difficult to focus on his work, on his daily activities. It started to wear away at his day to day. His mind was constantly preoccupied with the thoughts of what had happened, and he became increasingly obsessed with just watching the skies, looking for any signs of the craft all the time. He began to suffer from bouts of anxiety, particularly at night when he was alone with his thoughts, and the fear of the UFOs might return at any moment, and the uncertainty about what they might do weighed on him constantly.
And it must be wild to like gaslight yourself back to having not seen anything.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Like, you know you saw something, and then eventually you just decide, like, because nothing ever came of it, like, eh.
Yeah. Eh. And which leads to actually what I wrote here is, like, I think a lot of his paranoia, the meticulous note-taking, the photos of everything, like, looking at every light, again, looking it through his lens, is almost like him trying to take control over a situation that is utterly out of his control. These things appear when they want to. They fucking feel like scare him on a primal level. He has no ability to predict it. So like taking these photos, writing these notes at least gives him some form of like outlet, some way to wrap a harness around this and try and understand it, or at least
honestly,
keep it in a box.
That's like advice my therapist has given me before too. It's just to like fucking write some shit, like write your thoughts
down.
It
works.
It helps. Yeah, it feels good. Yeah.
I didn't even realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a back seat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you, and even negotiates better rates on your bills so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
I was a soldier, then a veteran, a husband, and a father. And with my VA home loan, I'm a homeowner. No down payment required and no PMI. Build your future with the VA home loan. Get what you earn. Visit choose.va.gov.
Not all veterans are eligible for this hyper amount of benefits mentioned here.
The intense emotional and psychological toll of these sightings also began to strain Walter's personal relationships, especially with his family. His wife, Frances, was initially supportive and concerned, but as the sightings continued and the media attention grew, the stress began to take its toll on their marriage. Frances, like Ed, was deeply affected by these events, but she also had to deal with the practical implications of the situation. The constant media presence, the influx of UFO investigators and curious onlookers, the growing skepticism from the community put immense pressure on her. She became increasingly worried about the impact of these events on their kids and their family life as a whole. And then Ed's obsession on top of it with these sightings and his determination to document every fucking detail of his life began to create a rift between the two of them. She felt that the sightings were consuming him, leaving little room for anything else in his life. Ed, on the other hand, felt that he had no fucking choice but to continue his efforts to capture this shit and share what he was experiencing. This difference in perspective led to a tension and then arguments as Frances struggled to understand why Ed was so determined to pursue something that seemed to be tearing his entire life apart. Their children were also affected by the situation, of course. The media attention and the strange events happening around their home created a sense of fear and confusion. Again, like before, we're talking cars parked outside their houses, you know, reporters like everywhere trying to figure, like, get every little detail. They overheard their parents' conversations and could sense the tension in the home. The kids could recall, like, talking about this, even if they didn't fully understand what was going on at the time. The kids became more withdrawn as well. And
that
the
would
ones
freak me out, too, if my kids started to be affected by shit.
Because their family's falling apart in front of their eyes.
Exactly. Like, over, like, horrifying. Over what? You know what I mean?
Like, exactly. Like, their dad is seemingly going nuts over something that, like, he can't really prove. Like, before the sightings, Ed had a successful career, building contractor, a nice solid reputation amongst his neighborhood, known for all the good shit. And now, only a month and a half, it only took a month and a half, and it all fucking is falling apart. Everything is just falling apart. The negative impact on his business was huge. He began missing deadlines, delaying projects, turning down new work. His clients, who had once trusted and respected him, started to question his reliability. Some were sympathetic, understanding to like something weird may have happened to him, while others just were skeptical and even dismissive completely. The negative impact on his business was compounded by the growing skepticism in the community as time went on. As the story of the Gulf Breeze sighting spread, some people began to view Walters with suspicion, and they questioned whether he was fabricating the story for attention or financial gain, and the skepticism extended to his professional reputation. Potential clients became wary of hiring someone who was at the center of a nationwide giant, like, fucking debate about UFOs, and Walter's business suffered as a result. The steady stream of work that had once kept him busy began to dry up, and he found himself struggling to maintain the level of income and stability that he enjoyed before the sightings happened. The financial strain added to the stress that he was already experiencing, further exacerbating the difficulties in his personal life. As Walter's story continued to kind of grow, he found himself thrust into the spotlight in a way that he had never anticipated when he told his little local newspaper about what had happened. Reporters from across the country descended like vultures.
How did that happen? It's like crazy to think about that. Things just like went out on the line and people would just like go check them out. Yeah.
I mean, but think about it, even today, like we go back to 2017 when those videos leaked, it caught fire.
You're absolutely right.
And like spread. Yeah, it's always happens when with UFOs because people are curious and there's never been a solid enough explanation for every single sighting. So people are eager for something. So the reporters, just like vultures, descended into Gulf Breeze, eager to interview Walter, see his photographs, go into his backyard, check out his house. Every little bit of the detail they could possibly get, they wanted. The once quiet town became a hub of activity with news vans parked on the streets, journalists knocking on the Walters door at all hours. The constant media presence became overwhelming, adding to the already high levels of stress and anxiety the Walters were experiencing. The media coverage was a double-edged sword for Walters. On one hand, it provided him with a platform to share this story, present the evidence that he'd gathered. But on the other hand, it opened him up to intense scrutiny and criticism, and skeptics and debunkers began to challenge the authenticity of the photographs, question his motives, suggesting that he was fabricating all of this for just fame or financial gain. And the public scrutiny that took a toll on Walters. He was not used to being in the spotlight and found the constant attention exhausting. The pressure to prove the authenticity of experiences was immense, and he felt a growing sense of isolation as he struggled to maintain his credibility amongst his decaying family that was happening in his own home. The Gulf Breeze community was initially supportive of Walters in the beginning, with many locals that were intrigued by the story and eager to learn more. However, as the sightings continued and the media attention grew, the community's reaction began to shift because their fucking town had just been overtaken by the news. While some residents remained supportive, others grew increasingly frustrated, angry, and skeptical, uncomfortable with the attention that the sightings were bringing into town. Gulf Breeze was a small, close-knit community before all of this, and the sudden influx of media, weird UFO nerds like me, and curious onlookers disrupted the town's quiet, suburban atmosphere, and some residents began to resent the intrusion and the way it was changing their town's reputation. The skepticism that was growing in the media began to seep into the community, and Walters found himself facing criticism and doubt from the people that he had known and were friends with for years. As a result, Walters began to feel socially isolated. He was no longer just Ed Walters, the building contractor. He was now the man at the center of this controversial
crazy
UFO sighting.
Old Maurice.
Yeah, he's crazy old Ed. Yeah. His new identity came with a social cost. Neighbors who had once been friendly and welcoming began to distance themselves, unsure of how even to interact with someone whose life had taken such a weird, unexpected public turn. His social life suffered as a result. He found himself withdrawing from the community activities that he was so involved with, uncomfortable with the way people were treating him, and the sense of isolation compounded by the strain in his personal relationships at home. And the difficulties in professional life just made things worse. This ruined his life. From the top down, his life fell apart all within about a month and a half.
Regardless of whether he was in on it or not, it fucked up his life at this point.
So, yeah, and so with his old social life falling apart, he began increasingly becoming involved with the UFO community. the people who would talk to him, like MUFON and other UFO researchers that would reach out to him, that were eager to study his photographs and gather information about his experiences. And he welcomed it, seeing it as an opportunity to validate his experiences and find answers to the questions that were consuming him. He began working closely with several prominent UFO investigators, providing them with access to his photographs, notebooks, and personal accounts of sightings. These investigators conducted interviews, analyzed the evidence, and even visited Gulf Breeze to see the location of the sightings for themselves.
That's the other Walters thing that's hoped, fucked up. Huh? That's the other thing that's fucked up is, like, at some point, even if he did see something and he's not trying to make money, as his life falls apart and he becomes more and more desperate, of course he's going to just go along with anybody who's offering him any sort of attention or money for his story. At this point, like, it doesn't matter if it's true or not. He has to be this way because he doesn't have a lot of other options because he's Crazy Ed.
He becomes Crazy Ed. Even the UFO community itself was divided on him. Like, a ton of the researchers thought he was just fucking faking it, thought it was a hoax, while others thought there was something here. With some members embracing Walters as a credible witness, while others just questioned the authenticity of any of his claims.
Do we have a list of the people that embraced him?
I could get you a list, I'm sure, but it's like different people within different organizations.
Understood. Like I'm just willing to make like a wild wager. The people who embraced him are also the same people that love attention.
Very possible. It's very possible. Well, we'll talk about more about that in next episode when we talk about the other
side. The more you talk about this, the more I'm like 100% out. I think this is super fake.
Interesting.
The more his life fell apart,
the more you don't think it's real.
I think this man gave up his family and his community for ego, is what I think. I think this dude straight up like saw that he could be famous because it was
spicy
around the country. And he literally wanted fame more than he wanted attention more than he wanted
everything else.
And it fell apart.
Initially, he sent in his photographs under a fake name. But he did eventually put his name to the photographs and it did take off.
Like, if he was concerned, he would have kept it under a fake name.
Maybe. I mean, maybe. It's hard. What do you think? I'm curious. Do you feel similar?
Like I say,
we're basically at the end of the episode.
Yeah, my point is, it's the same point that I just made. It's like, at this point, it doesn't matter whether it's true or fake because like what's happened has happened. Like, it doesn't make me think he's faking it more or less now because I'm thinking of what I'm thinking about, which is like, once his life is fucked, what is his option? Like,
who's left?
Like, let's say he completely hoaxed it, right? Surely he didn't mean to fuck his life up when he had the idea to make a hoax, right? Like, surely he thought it was going to bring him something, right? Like fame or money or, you know, whatever he wanted. But once it didn't happen, once that didn't occur for him, now he's just fucked. So everything after that point, whenever that point is, like whenever, if the book comes out and it doesn't hit or whatever, and he's just
It didn't blow up. It didn't get a move. It's like, it didn't.
That's
like
what I mean. He's still just like a destitute guy whose family hates him now or whatever. Right.
But you are the inherent like fault here is that he's still human. And
yes,
saying I lied is like a massive, like people do not do that.
Double down.
Like people who create continent spanning, mysteries do not say, guys, I lied to you all. I just wanted attention. Like they don't do that. It just does not happen.
It's very possible the initial plan was just to maybe be a little bit more famous within Gulf Breeze or smaller. And then when it went national, he panicked and he had to start making shit up.
It could have just been a thing for fun. It could have been he thought he saw something and then he just, who knows? But I fundamentally believe that like his whole family ditching and leaving and all that stuff. To me, it sounds like when people get a little culty and the family just over it, they're like, look, dude, it's, give it up. Stop. And he's like, I've crafted a UFO. I'm taking UFO photos. You know, like, and they're like, oh my God.
Yeah.
Dude,
like, what
the fuck? And then they have to be like, oh, we didn't know anything about this. Or they're going to like go down as like accomplices in the story forever.
Right. So it's better to walk away. Yeah. And be like, we're out.
It's like the truth of like, you know, what's the potato mashed potatoes movie? Close Encounters, right?
It's his family. Yeah.
The truth is that doing it when there's no aliens is going to be the thing that fucks your family up. You know what I mean?
I mean,
like, because immediately when you do that, you're like, it's like functionally, it's probably like not much better than being on like the sex offender registry for somebody to like Google you and find out that you like are like a like 10 year, 15 year UFO witness and that you have like a book and multiple like news stories about you and nobody believes you. Like, that's probably instant kryptonite for like any job, right?
Yeah. It's, I think you guys are going to like that, because we'll get there next episode, but the story is like, it gets weirder, and like the bunker side thing, like, it's weird. Regardless of what was a hoax or not, like, the long-term effects of this event, fuck, like, it changed his life one way or another. Whether he meant it to change the way it did or not, it fucked up his whole life. It transformed him from just this ordinary family man to just this UFO crazy dude from his little town.
It should be a Coen Brothers movie. Is what it should be. It should be like a fucking Fargo movie.
Yeah. Over time, the intense media attention began to fade, but the impact on his life remained. He continued to be involved in the UFO community, attending conferences, giving interviews, sharing his experiences with others who would report similar encounters. You know, the typical thing people do after everything goes wrong and they have only these people to turn to. He also published the book, The Gulf Breeze Sightings, in 1990, where he documented his experiences in detail and offered his perspective on the events that had changed his life. However, the legacy of the Gulf Breeze sightings is like a really mixed one, obviously. Even to this day, people debate each other over whether it was real or not. Some people believe that he was telling a story entirely, completely true. Others believe he was entirely lying. And then there are people like me who might sit in the middle somewhere. Regardless, though, this is where the majority and the major sightings within Ed Walters ends, and where the story of how his life at this point ends. He did get a divorce from his wife in 1992. And we're going to talk more about that next week, however, when we go into more details on the other side of things, the debunking side of things, the skepticism side of things. So with that, gentlemen, Gulf Breeze Part 1 is all done.
Minisodes at patreon.com.
/
SWOCBC. Just kidding.
No, Chilluminati Pod. Thank you all so much. We'll see you next week. Appreciation. We love you. Goodbye.
Anyway. Me and my wife were sitting outside indulging on our porch one night, enjoying ourselves. I needed to go to the bathroom, so I stepped back inside, and after a few moments, I hear my wife go, "Holy shit, get out here!" So I quickly dash back outside, and she's looking up at the sky in awe. I look up too, and there's a perfect line of dozen lights traveling across the sky.
What does VA mean to me?
A place for my daughter to call home. Thanks to the VA home loan.
A new lease on life. The best healthcare team I've ever had is here at VA.
And education and the opportunity to open doors I never thought possible with my GI Bill.
The financial support I need to manage the disabilities I develop because of my service.
Get what you earn. Visit choose.va.gov.
Not all veterans are eligible for this hyper amount of benefits mentioned here.
Forget the pressure to overhaul your life. The new year doesn't need a new you. It needs you. Grow Therapy helps you make meaningful change at your pace and on your time. Grow connects you with thousands of independent, licensed therapists across the U.S., offering both virtual and in-person sessions, nights and weekends. There are no subscriptions, no long-term commitments. You just pay per session. Grow accepts over 100 insurance plans, including Medicaid in some states. Sessions average about $21 with insurance, and some pay as little as $0, depending on their plan. Visit growtherapy.com/try now today to get started. That's growtherapy.com/try now. Availability and coverage vary by state and insurance plan.